Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and this is Season 4, Episode 12.
Indeed
What's
it is.
What's our topic, Drew?
It's something that we've literally just seen. We went out today about a week late to see the new Star Wars spin-off film, Solo, A Star Wars Story. A lot of S's in there.
So I guess we'll start with kind of first impressions. So I think neither of us were going in hoping for much.
No, there's a reason we've seen this like a week late. Neither of us were that interested in it, I don't think.
Yeah, and sort of schedules and stuff as well on top of that. But and it's kind of hasn't done that well at the box office.
No.
But then I was hearing from people that it's actually okay and it's just a nice film, and yeah, I pretty much agree with that. It's like a good fun film.
I'm in exactly the same place. It was I came out surprised at how good I thought it was. Like, it's not brilliant, it's not something you must rush out and see, but for a standalone Han Solo film, I think this was about as good as it could have gotten.
Yeah. I mean, because I really had misgivings about the Han Solo actor. I can't remember his name.
Alden Ehrenreich. Yeah,
that's it. Alden Ehrenreich. In the trailer, I was like, ooh, he doesn't feel like Han Solo. But actually, he does kind of a good job of not trying to be Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are moments where I can see Han Solo in him. He just sort of embodies the spirit of Han Solo somehow really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
think that was my major criticism of when I saw the trailer, was that he just kind of didn't read like Han Solo to me in the trailer. He's not doing Harrison Ford, he's not doing a specific impression. So there were moments throughout the film where with any film where they do like prequels like this with different actors, I always kind of have to remind myself, oh yes, this is supposed to be that character from that film and that character from that film. And I didn't find myself doing much of that in Solo. So yeah, he does kind of do a great job. And I've just noticed he has the same birthday as me, so that's also a bonus for him.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Are we going to do a little synopsis of the, what do you call it, plot?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I don't think we need to get too specific about it. It's kind of a heist film. It starts with Han on Corellia as kind of it's not really clear what he is. He's kind of just a young criminal.
Yeah, he's kind of, I think he's grown up as a street urchin in this kind of Fagin type scenario where he's like a street kid who goes out and gets stuff for this sort of criminal, overlord type person.
Yeah.
Stroke protector.
Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of that's just the opening scene. We don't really spend much time there. The film is him kind of escaping into the wider universe and kind of falling into a wider criminal conspiracy.
Yeah, so he hooks up with these people who are on a job, and that's pretty much it. He's pretty much with this crew, their world for the rest of the film. Kind of thing. That's pretty much it. He has his kind of love interest or best friend, childhood friend, who also grew up in that same situation, but they get separated early on. And it's him trying to get back together and get their lives back together and on track, and their dream of getting off planet and getting a ship and doing their own thing and being free.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the plot.
Yes.
And it was okay. It kind of worked. I felt the film was a bit long.
Absolutely.
I think they could have cut a couple of the sequences. So there are sort of two heists, pretty much, aren't there?
And
I think they could have, like, either cut made them shorter, or cut one of them out, or cut one of the escape sequences out. I just felt there was like a lot of running away and sort of fiddling with stuff, and then people coming and stopping their plans, and then them and all that kind of heisty type stuff.
Yeah,
the heists weren't particularly tight. It wasn't like a sort of Ocean's 11.
No, they were just extended action sequences more than anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there was just too many of them. And then there was the sort of hark back to Empire with the sort of escape through a sort of tunnel in an asteroid or whatever, and then a monster being in there, and so that kind of, I was just like, really, do we have to do this again? We've done this in the original films. I did feel it was a bit long, but then I really liked towards the end they do this kind of everyone's double crossing each other and holding guns up to each other, and I kind of liked that bit of it.
It had that thing that I had with the Last Jedi, where there was a lot of stuff going on, and then it seemed to be coming to a conclusion, and then there is another act to go.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a 3-act film with 4-act stuffed into it.
Yeah.
Like that. So you've got the beginning on Corellia, you've got the first heist, then you've got the second heist, and then you've got another act after that as well. And it feels like, I don't think you could really have lost either of the heists without quite significantly affecting the story of the film, because he does need to progress from one to the next to the next. But maybe the last heist could have encompassed that final act as well, instead of kind of separating it out to its own kind of final face-off thing.
Yeah, I think by just like cutting out that runaway scene.
I liked that. I thought that was one of my favorite parts of the film, I think.
Yeah, it is very Star Warsy. Really, that was your favorite part? Okay.
I mean, not my favorite part, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, see, I didn't. I found it really boring.
But but how could you have had a Han Solo film where he doesn't get to do a crazy piloting thing? And and that specific crazy piloting thing, which, not to spoil anything, is something that is referenced later on in Star Wars.
It's true. But I just think one of the heists could have been shorter, and then just wrapped things up, just made it a bit tighter, the heist.
Yeah,
sequences.
No, absolutely. Yeah. The second heist in particular, I felt myself just lose it, not paying much attention.
I can't even remember how it worked. Like the first heist, I can see it really clearly.
Yeah.
What they were trying to do, and the second heist is fuzzy, and I only saw it, 2 hours ago.
It's kind of like, not that we were expecting a sort of an Ocean's film sort of heist, but it is just kind of, they sneak into a place and then it goes wrong, and for the rest of it, it's just kind of a gunfight until they leave.
So and then there's the sort of, I suppose the core of it is Chewie and Han meeting, and that sort of their friendship being cemented, and they did that really quickly, which was quite good. And I think it worked. Again, it kind of referenced, well, this time it referenced Jedi, but it just worked. It was really nice.
It was done so quickly that I was worried that it was going to be slightly unbelievable. They get thrown together and suddenly they're the best of friends. But they do kind of see how it happens. It is believable that those two characters would stick with each other.
Yeah, it is. So that was really nice. And then there's Donald Glover as Lando.
Yeah.
And as everyone expected, and you could see from the trailers, he does a really good Lando.
Yeah, he does. He's probably my favourite character in the film.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Although I did like Paul Bettany as
as
the baddie. I love Paul Bettany, and it's always nice to see him. He's good at just being evil, suave villain.
And he is kind of like he's surprising. He doesn't just sit straight into an archetype. He kind of bounces between being just deadly and very nice and very friendly and very caring. And yeah. you never quite know where he's coming from.
Yeah, he's really good because he doesn't play baddies very often, but no. He was really good at it. Because he's got this like really that really soft kind of whispery voice.
Yeah.
And so and in this it becomes quite sinister because, yeah, there's always this veneer of politeness, but yeah, there's this menace because when we first meet him he's just dispatched with someone. He obviously likes to get his hands dirty when it comes to getting rid of people who have displeased him, so right from the moment we see him we're like ooh, and then he kind of just smooths his hair back and grabs a cocktail and welcomes them in whilst this body's being dragged off stage left.
And like, it suits him really well because he does have that kind of like the persona he uses with Vision is where he's very well spoken, he's very calm, he's very polite, and he doesn't have to change that for it to become threatening.
You know, when you know
that he's got something up his sleeve, now it's like Vision is about to stab you, but you can see it coming, and you're like, oh my god, this is the most scary thing.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of quietly, really powerful. I mean, the women don't get an awful lot to do. They get quite short shrift in this.
Yeah. There's a specific moment in the first heist where I think we both went...
Yeah.
We winced. Like,
what was that?
Yeah. It would be difficult to discuss that without spoiling it quite heavily, but yeah. If you've seen it, you'll know the moment we meant.
I'd quite like to be able to discuss that.
All right, shall we put a spoiler? Yeah, we'll spoil it later. Yeah,
because there's just elements of that. Yeah, it's just pretty badly handled, actually. Yeah. So,
we can talk about the other female characters. We had there's, I guess, two other ones in the film, and there's Emilia Clarke who plays Han Solo's love interest, who we've kind of touched on already. She's okay. I wasn't that sold on her character, and it's difficult to sort of, at least in the first two acts of the film, she begins as playing this kind of, she's kind of a Han Solo character herself. She's the same kind of criminal that he is on Corellia, which is to say a street urchin, and she kind of has the same attitude. She's got a bit of the improvisation herself. When we come back to her in the second act, she's kind of lost all that, and she kind of just follows them around for the second act, and she doesn't get involved with the heist, but she's more like kind of a secretary standing there. Like, she's the one who's just rolling her eyes disapprovingly and...
Yeah, it is. It's really weird how they do this switch. And I thought they were going down the route of... because there's like this ambiguity as to... because when they meet up again, she's in this really sort of like... bougie kind of swanky setting, but we know that they're all kind of bad people, so they're ill-gotten gains, I guess, has, you know, given them this sort of high society kind of feel. And so she's all dressed up and she's in this nice dress with a thigh-high split, and she's like, oh, you know, you don't want to know how I got here, and she's being all sort of coy, and I was like, oh god, if they turned her into some sort of courtesan or something.
Yeah,
I was really afraid that they'd gone that route. Like, the only way a woman can get out of a bad situation is through her sexuality. And they kind of skirt around that and never quite clear up how she got there or what her role is. Paul Bettany calls her his lieutenant at one point, but she doesn't seem to be. She's almost like a PA, like you say.
It does get clarified a little bit nearer the end of the film, but it's still... Like, it doesn't explicitly say that she...
No.
Yeah, it doesn't have the role that... It doesn't go down the route that she's become a courtesan, but I think it's deliberately using that perception in the film.
It is.
Yeah.
It's sort of implying that they have some sort of relationship, like physical relationship, which is just a real shame. Because, like you say, she was a Han Solo style character. But the thing is, she didn't even do much when she was you know, in the first act, she just jumped in the car, and but she knew what type of car it was and stuff, but that was it. But it's not like she did the driving whilst he did the shooting or anything. She just didn't do anything, really.
Mm.
And she didn't get much to do. She got a fight scene towards the end.
Yeah. And yeah, and then at the end of that first act, she is... she at the end of the first act, she kind of gets just put aside and fridged. Well, not fridged. Fridged means killed, doesn't it?
Yeah, but like put on ice.
Yeah, she gets put in the refrigerator. So I think it's true to the term. And just kind of becomes Han's motivation for basically the first half of the film. And in fairness, she does come back and she plays a much bigger role. But it is kind of like while you're watching that first act, it is disappointing that she's just kind of.
Yeah, she's like, there as a name to invoke. We don't need her anymore because Han Solo now has to go off and find his own way and doesn't need this female character until he needs her again later.
Yeah.
So she is kind of surplus to requirements until he needs her.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a shame that. And then the other female character is a droid.
Mm-hmm.
So
and her name is L337, which is a very geeky reference, which I don't think works very well.
Reference?
Yeah, like I just didn't want to like explain it in detail on the podcast. L337 is leet. It's the way people used to write the mid 2000s. Do you know this? Or am I explaining? Fair enough. So yeah, she's leet. Apparently.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, which is... God. Yeah, no, it's a bit awful.
That's such a weird throwback.
Yeah, it is, because it's like the late 90s there. I remember using that stuff in, like, IRC channels in the 90s.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay, yeah. So she's the co-pilot for Lando.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's this... she's the comic relief.
She is.
But she's used in a really bizarre way.
Yeah.
Like in several ways.
Yeah.
She's kind of this voice of liberation for droids, but that's used as a sort of the butt of the jokes for all the other characters, including the black character of Lando, who rolls his eyes at her going, you know, I just want liberation, and is that because you're my overlord? And he's like, duh, you and your freedom talk. And it's just like really weird, especially when it's paired with Chewie, who also has a liberation story going on with, you know, the rest of the Wookiees that he discovers, who, you know, we know that in the greater Star Wars universe, the Wookiees are sort of enslaved and all this sort of thing. So that's mentioned. So there are these two kind of slavery stories going on, but the droid one has no gravitas. It's just a joke. Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah, because those two scenes play out literally alongside each other in the second act. They are happening at the same time, and Chewie's going after the Wookiees, who are like, it's a really important thing. And every time L3 mentions the droids and Tass Liberator, it's just a silly joke. And it's kind of like, I'm not saying that this film needed to go into like droid rights, it's nothing to do with that, but if you're going to mention it, you kind of have to put it in context. And you can have a comic relief character, you can't really have a comic relief species.
It's so weird. And then on top of that, it's then sort of implied that Lando and L3 have had a physical relationship, that, you know, he's been attracted to her or something. You know, there's just this conversation about, you know, that Lando's like totally into me, but I just can't go there, or whatever it is. Yeah.
And it's played as a joke when it's first brought up. I don't think the film is trying to imply that they've ever actually had anything going on. It's just like this kind of unspoken sexual tension that they allude to. And then later in the film... that is made. Lando reacts to something in a way that makes you think that, okay, maybe he does actually have feelings for her.
Yeah.
But then that's kind of just left there. Like, it's not dropped, but it's not the film won't give you an answer about it, and it just feels like it's afraid to.
Yeah. So, yeah, because before the film came out, there was this whole internet conversation about, Lando and his sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And, and it just feels like they've tried to allude to the fact that Lando, may be attracted to all sorts of people.
Yeah.
But they don't actually definitively say that. No. It's like they're afraid to actually... show anything. They just after the fact said, oh yeah, and by the way, Lando is attracted to all sorts of people, so they kind of it's so weird, like, the way they've played it.
It's the Dumbledore thing again, where it's introduced into the conversation and then the filmmakers don't have the courage or the convictions to actually put it in there,
and it's just so offensive really, because it's just if you're going, like, why mention it?
I guess in this case it's droids that are offended, so
we all know what it's standing in for. And there's a later scene where he's flirting with something or someone, but we don't actually see who it is. So once again, it's like this fear of having Lando be attracted to anything other than, a heterosexual woman.
Yeah.
That's how it comes across. And because they started this whole conversation.
Yeah.
So it was just weird. And then it just meant this character had been the butt of all their jokes. Like, everything she cared about was a joke.
Yeah.
And their maybe relationship or sexual tension was a joke, and so then when there comes this emotional moment between them, it just looks like a pantomime kind of reaction from Lando. It just falls like really flat and really wrong. So it was just a really weird whole situation with that character.
Absolutely.
I don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
But so things that we liked about it.
Woody Harrelson, I thought, was quite good. Not brilliant, quite good.
He was just like a good Woody Harrelson character, being gruff and kind of commanding and sort of team leadery. he was quite good. They had quite good chemistry and stuff. I liked him as a character. You find out something cool about what they based that character on.
Well, just while I was looking up at the at the Wikipedia page after I watched the film, he was like apparently based on Long John Silver, which, looking back at the film, I can absolutely believe that. He's a really interesting pirate character.
And it does play like that, and it's a really good idea, and I guess that's why it worked so well, that kind of relationship.
Yeah,
and it didn't feel kind of hokey or forced or anything. And it was really nice to see that young Han Solo sort of looking all like bright-eyed at this, like, God, I want to be this like rogue who could like spin a gun and look super cool. And it was really nice to see that sort of wide-eyed naive Han. It was cool. Because that's the kids we were. Right when we watched It's like, God, I don't want to be that guy, he's so cool. Because nobody wanted to be Luke.
No, that's definitely true.
Just Lando was really cool, and there were lots of nice gags with him and his suaveness and his capes and things like that. And and I like the way it kind of set up that rivalry they have, that thing where they're friends but through gritted teeth almost. It's like, well, we made it through that thing, but I don't trust you as far as I can spit. And they sort of set that up really nicely, I thought. And so it made kind of Empire and the betrayal of Empire, but they're not really work. Kind of, you can just see where that came from through their relationship that they set up in this film, which was nice. And I suppose the other thing was like how it ties into the other films was one of the things we were grumbling about.
This is something. Shall we? There's a couple of things that I want to mention that would be spoil. So, shall we put the spoiler wall up here?
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
okay. So, beyond this point, we will be talking about plot elements that you, if you haven't seen the film, you might not want to know them in advance. Why am I explaining? You know what a spoiler is. One of the things that annoyed me about the film throughout was that it, like a lot of these sort of prequel and tie-in films, it felt the need to tie everything to something that happened in the later Star Wars films. So, for example, you see how Han got his blaster. You see how he got the Millennium Falcon. You see how he did the Kessel Run. You see all the things that he ever mentioned as background in, like, Star Wars. Yeah. Like, everything you can think of, it apparently originated in this, like, 3-month stretch that happens over the course of Solo.
And Chewie's gun belt.
Chewie's gun, yep.
Yeah, he puts those on in these as well.
Yeah, the dice that he has on the thing, it's like there's nothing left untouched. They clearly kind of went through the original trilogy and wrote down every like little quirk of Han's character and Chewie's character and said, okay, how can we tell the origin story of that? And I don't need the origin story of Han's gun. He can just have bought that. That's fine by me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then it's sort of everything kind of ties into A New Hope as well. So when it finishes, he's going off to Tatooine to like hook up with this
big shot gangster.
Boss. Yeah.
I wonder who that could be.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess he spends 20 years on Tatooine or something, waiting for. It just didn't need that because that's part of Han's mythos, isn't it? It's just like, because, you know, some of the stories might not be true and that's part of his character. And that's okay for him to just like big up himself and that's part of who he is. But everything is like totally true.
Yeah.
Everything he said, you know, he did do the Kessel Run and, you know, and all the thing, it's just it's just there's no ambiguity left and it's nice to fill in some of those things yourself. So I mean it didn't spoil it for me, but it's just a shame, like not everything has to be tied up into these really neat bows.
It always takes me out of the film. I forget that I'm trying to watch a story about Han Solo and then I'm taken out and reminded that I'm watching a film that connects kind of
emerging. You're watching a film franchise all of a sudden.
Exactly. And then there's that really strange bit at the end where Darth Maul shows up. It's the weirdest thing. So to connect this with as if it needed any more connecting with the original trilogy. It's also connected with the prequel trilogy in that apparently Darth Maul was kind of pulling the strings the whole time. And
which
like, who wanted that character back? He's like one of the coolest things in the Phantom Menace, but that's not saying a lot. Fine. Like, I like him. I think he's a great villain for that film, but I didn't need any more of him.
No, it's like, who needed to bring him back? Because then he has nothing to do with anything moving forward.
Yeah.
So it like, was bizarre.
Nothing about this film actually ties in with Phantom Menace.
No, it was just really weird, like some weird throwback. It's like, let's go retro.
I was extra disappointed with it because one of the things that I was thinking throughout the film was, oh, it's nice that unlike Rogue One, which kind of promised this but didn't deliver, this was a film about Star Wars which didn't mention the Force at all. It didn't have any Jedi in it. There was no mention of the wider magical universe. And it's like that all the way through till this scene, at which point suddenly Darth Maul shows up, uses the Force for no reason to pick something up which he could have just reached over and picked up. And then he gets his lightsaber out for no reason other than to just to provide some menacing lighting.
Yeah, it was so funny. He was just like, shing. Yeah, because it was all over holograms with communication, and it was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? We're just on a phone call.
And the other thing, when you kind of first see him, he's wearing a hood and he's hunched over and he's talking in quite a low voice, and you think it's hinting at it being the Emperor.
Right.
So when it's Darth Maul, you're like, oh.
It's just like, okay, this guy. I guess. It is. It's really funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was weird. But then I suppose now the spoiler wall is down, we can mention the Tandy Newton character. Who's, just the black woman who runs with Woody Harrelson's character. Mm-hmm. And, she's like pretty badass. She's totally competent.
Yeah.
And she's got this cool afro and, she's questions him. They're in love and it's a really nice, cool relationship. And then she blows herself up to save all the white people.
Yeah. It's so quick as well. She just pulls out a detonator and like kind of says, good luck, boys. And then,
It's just like, sorry, I'm just like another woman who's surplus to requirements. Yeah. And because I'm the black one, I've got to die.
Yeah. This will make some good character motivation for you, though. So get to it.
Yeah. But, and it doesn't really, they just go, no.
Yeah.
And then they're like,
she's not really mentioned again. Woody Harrelson's character doesn't, he spends maybe a scene kind of scowling, but he doesn't mourn her in any extended way.
He doesn't mourn, no, exactly. He doesn't, there is nothing. She's just gone and then you've forgotten about her entirely. Yeah.
And the same then happens to L3 when she dies.
Yeah.
She
gets more mourning, though. She gets a bigger scene.
She does.
The robot
gets
a bigger scene than this woman who he's got a clear relationship with, love.
But even then, even though she got a slight, a slightly longer mourning period, they still just go back to her body, rip the guts out of it, and attach her to the Falcon. She's kind of literally objectified after her death.
Right.
She's made into the Nava computer.
She is, because when they suggest that, I was like, ooh, Lando's not going to like this, because he's been like, no.
And he runs off to get a spanner. Yeah,
he does. He's like, that's a really great idea. Yeah. I was like, don't they say sorry as they tear her open? And I was just like, which then also undermines her droids' rights thing once again.
Yeah.
So it's just like got this whole weird civil rights story on it. And then she just becomes objectified, she dies, and her body can just then be used by all the other characters to help their story. Not very good.
Not great at all.
No, very weird.
Yeah.
But other than that, I did actually
enjoy it. I enjoyed the film. Like, the thing is, I didn't love it. There's nothing in there that I would say, this was a really brilliant thing. The cinematography was pretty good. It's got this, it's dark throughout. It's shot in this really kind of low light way, and it looks really good, and it lends the film a really interesting atmosphere. I like that.
Yeah. And Paul Bettany's hangout is really cool. It's all like gold and sort of art deco-y. It's really nice. Yeah. Looks a bit like the Gambling Planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does quite. It reminded me of Cloud City a bit as well, and just kind of
which the Gambling City was. Also, and it's
there
like
are
really
there
cool.
are like three kinds of planet in Star Wars. There's Sand Planet, there's Casino Planet, and there's Forest Planet.
Yeah, exactly. There's Ice Planet.
Oh yeah, Ice Planet and Pollution Planet.
But also the sort of cantina scene on Paul Bettany's, it's his yacht, isn't it? On his yacht.
Yeah.
Is really nice. It's all like gold and like soul singers and it's really cool. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
I liked that scene with the singer in the gold dress with the sort of like mouthpiece and stuff. It looked really nice. But what were we saying? But other than that, it's not majorly memorable.
No.
I think you said you preferred it to Rogue One, but I loved Rogue One. Mm. So, I didn't hate it. And I thought I was going to just be bored or disappointed, and I wasn't.
Yeah. No, I was pleasantly surprised by this.
Yeah. It's just nice. Good fun. That's it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's all we've got to say. Yeah,
I think we are done. So I'd say go see Solo if you've been in two minds. Mm-hmm. It's nice, good fun, and I think the leads do good job on those characters.
Yeah,
and it sets up some nice things with Chewie, Han, and Lando.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So that's us. Argue the toss. Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio. We'll be right back.